You.
Fine, how are you?
Fine. I'm very sorry about your mom. My mom went through the same thing.
It's been a long time. She just continually gets worse and all kinds of stuff, so.
Yeah, I was just on the phone with an old friend of mine. His wife is in, and of course they can't see her like you can't see her, and she just doesn't, she no longer remembers the names of her kids. It's hard.
Yeah, she definitely being locked up these last few months, her speech has gotten so bad. She doesn't make much sense anymore.
Yeah. Well, I don't either. I've been locked up for a few months and I can barely talk. So I'm stuck.
Wow.
But here we are.
Yeah.
So we have a packed agenda, and it looks like Larry's got a dog emergency and he's not going to make it, or he might make it late,
Okay.
which is too bad because, he really needs to hear about this siren stuff
Yeah.
because he's kind of a skeptic,
Well, we'll have the recording.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, whether he looks at it, we don't know. And so Mary, how do you want me to post this? What do I have to do?
I believe I can go to you as panelist and make you the host. And so it's already recording. And so I'm changing you to the host. So you don't really have to do anything if you get any questions. And I'm just going to turn off my video and mute myself so I can probably watch and see if you need anything.
Well, Larry's in,
Oh, there's Larry.
and so is Danielle. Yay. Okay, super. And then I suppose we should just pause recording until. All right, so I'm starting the meeting now. It's 3:05, and we have, first of all, to call our roll. We have Larry Nagle is here, and I'm here, and Lisa Krona is here, Katie Gluck is here. Peter Guerrero is here. Peter Liddell has an emergency. Maybe he'll get to us later. Paul Moss is here, and Dave Spath is here. So that's great. At this point, we want to call for items not on the agenda. We have one attendee. If you have any item of concern that's not on the agenda, would you like to express that now? This would be Lorica. You can raise your hand, or I can just, I'm allowing you to talk if you would like to talk.
She said no, thank you in her chat.
Oh, thank you. Okay, I didn't see that. Okay, so we will take you out of the loop then, I guess. What else can we do on you? Still getting used to some of this. All right, so we're gonna remove you from that. That's fine. Well, cancel that. I don't know how to take you off as a thing, but that's we're good. Mary, if you can remove Lorica as a panelist without shoving her off the webinar, that would be great. Meanwhile, why don't we get to some of the very quick business that we have? And just going through the meeting packet, the minutes are there. I received no corrections on the minutes, except a couple that I made. And if anyone else is okay with this, then we'll approve the minutes. Can I have a motion for that?
I move to approve the minutes.
How about a second?
A second.
Okay. I guess I have to roll call everybody. So, Peter, yes or no? Okay, good. Then Larry?
Yes.
Yes. And Dave?
Yes.
And Lisa?
Yes.
And Paul?
Yes.
And Mike? I'm sorry, not Mike. Katie? Katie, yes, you're muted. I'm going to ask to unmute you there. Anyway, Katie, can you unmute yourself?
Yes.
Okay, good. Fine. Terrific. Okay, so that's unanimous. Danielle, we have you as a panelist. Everybody should know that your nomination committee will be considered at the board's July 8th meeting. But you speak up whenever you want, because you're on the panel.
Thank you.
Kevin, I think you want to adopt the agenda as well, do you not?
Do we have to adopt an agenda?
No.
We don't? Oh, okay.
No, I think we're okay. Okay, great. So we got the minutes. That's thanks very much. Then the first thing I want to thank Peter for crafting this letter to the county fire chief and Alert Wildfire about the need to have some have some control over the Vollmer wind Vollmer camera so that it's fixed on Wildcat Canyon. Peter, do you want to say like three words on that?
Well, it's a combination of a thank you letter and asking for two things. One is the ability to keep the camera during Diablo wind effects, wind events, focused looking down the canyon north towards Kensington, El Cerrito. And the second is to solicit views on a citizen watch that would help monitor the camera during Diablo fire events. I should say that it's addressed to both the Nevada, University of Nevada, which is the source of these cameras that have been set up all over the place. They've been the institution that's been the structure behind the placement of these cameras, and also to the fire chief of Contra Costa County to make these asks. We don't expect Court Cooper, who deserves a lot of credit actually for this letter and also for getting the second camera up and running on the peak. This is Vollmer Peak. And his suggestion is that we actually send two letters. One is just a simple, short and sweet thank you to the university and to the fire chief. And the second would be an ask of the fire chief, because that would be the fire chief is the one Wildfire and the Contra Costa Fire Protection District and CAL FIRE are all have some control over the camera, and those who are would be the individuals we'd actually want to ask. So the letter's in draft right now. We could always make changes. We could break it up into two separate letters if we want. When I looked at it, I didn't think it was that necessary to break it up into two separate letters, but some editorial clarification would have been helpful.
We could probably, I mean, it would be my instinct to have our board president send it. It would, I think, probably have more sway if it came from the whole board represented that way. If nobody minds, we can pass it up to Julie for consideration. Hearing no objection, let's try to do that. And my sense is that you can already monitor the camera, and anyone can tune in and monitor the camera. There's a website for that. We just can't control it. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And I think that during these wind events, they're going to have somebody monitoring it 24/7 anyway, but we should check on that, and it never hurts to have another pair of eyes.
Kevin, can I ask Peter a quick question?
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Which, there are two cameras up there in Vollmer. Which camera are we talking about?
Yeah. One of the two. There's one, when you go to the site, there's one that seems to be either usually typically pointed east or south. And there's one that is pointed more towards the northeast.
Right.
And so it would be the most recent camera number two, let's call it, that would be rotated that way. But both cameras can be rotated, I think, in 360 degrees.
No, I was just wondering, having looked at them, there's one that shoots out and you see San Pablo Dam Reservoir.
That's the one we'd want, because the other one is, I believe, the last time I looked, it was pointed towards Mount Diablo.
Yeah, now, will any of that pick up the part of Tilden Park down where those eucalyptus stands are?
The camera that's pointed towards the reservoir should, because it's a wide angle lens and it should probably pick up a good part of that eucalyptus grove. Yeah, there's a good point here, is that these cameras probably should be, during events as well, rotated periodically to monitor a larger area than just whatever their angle of view is, which is less than 180 degrees. I'm not sure what the angle is, but the cameras, I believe, can rotate full 360. They also, I believe, from court, have a infrared capability. Because when I looked at the cameras at night, it was very, very difficult using just ambient light to tell what you were looking at. So whoever is going to be doing the monitoring will probably need to familiarize himself with the light signature of the canyons and the cities and be able to differentiate that between an actual fire event and just ambient nighttime lighting, street lighting and stuff. Because you get these very bright glows towards Richmond, San Pablo, and it's clear it's not a fire, but during Diablo fire season, you'd want to be able to differentiate between a really bright object and an actual fire.
Okay, well, thank you. And so I think now it being 3:15, I want to stay on schedule and let's talk about the other things we have a bit later if we have time for them, because I want Mike and Chris to be able to talk about their public address systems. And we've set time aside for that. By all means, Mike, Chris, welcome. Use the time you need. Okay, we've got you scheduled for a good 45 minutes, I think, and the chief can drop in whenever he can on that as well. So I'll pass it over to you. And if everyone else could, I guess if you can mute yourself and if you can close your video, then we'll be. Mike, anyway, go ahead. And do you want to share your screen with us?
I think Chris is gonna drive, but I just want to take a minute to introduce Chris. We're Genesis, formerly LRAD. We went through a name change just because we're now part of, we not only do we do the sirens and the speakers, but we also have a software component, which we'll talk about in the presentation. But Chris is my vice president of sales, and we're going to kind of tag team this, but I'm going to let him drive. And we're open to questions after we do our little presentation.
Great. Thank you. Please proceed.
A second, and then let's see. Can you see my screen?
No, right now we're looking at Mike.
Oh. Mike, can you share your screen?
Okay, we're all panelists. I think you can share it now.
Okay, I got it. Okay, can you see the presentation here?
Yes.
Okay, great. All right, let's see. Is it big enough, or I can make it a little bit bigger?
Seems, yeah, that's looking good. Okay.
Okay. All right, thank you guys for the opportunity to give you a little brief background on Genesis. And we're a critical communications company. The way that we were kind of founded, and Mike talked about it briefly, is we're formerly LRAD Corporation. We're located in San Diego. We're publicly traded under the NASDAQ under the symbol of GNSS. We've been around for more than 30 years. And our signature is the long-range acoustic device, LRAD, and it's a directional speaker. And because we've been very successful around the world selling these speakers, a lot of our customers asked us to create a mass notification or an outdoor warning speaker, which we have, and we've implemented in the whole country of Japan after a tsunami. We've implemented it in Puerto Rico and the U.S., and also a lot of different locations in California. And Tom Welch from Mill Valley will also talk about it. What we believe that the reason we changed the name is because we became LRAD, the hardware, and we also provided the software. The software solution provides connectivity and integration to multiple channels. And so we can communicate to notify cell phones and also speakers through all of the through our hardware and software channels. So the next slide, we'll kind of talk about our multiple channel public safety system. So if you look in the middle, we have the red, we have external data sensors. So we can take inputs like earthquake detection or some other weather sensors or weather devices, and we can bring that in and we can process that information. Or we can take from the upper part a mobile app for somebody to activate or a computer to activate. We can generate all these multiple notifications. Mainly that the signature is the audible outdoor speaker, but we can also do SMS, voice calls, send through the social media. We can send CAP, and we also can generate IPAWS and receive IPAWS. So we can provide the WIA notification. All of our systems that we can provide they're not cell coverage or they're not power dependent, meaning that of course, if the power goes out, our system runs on 24 volt DC batteries and they're charged by solar panel or by AC. That gives you plenty of time, more than 72 hours of continuous activation with those, and most of the time the messages are roughly 30 seconds to a minute. So you have plenty of messaging with the system. We can provide, it's an IP-based solution, and we can provide satellite, which we've done in Mill Valley, so you are not cell dependent, or if anything goes out, if there's a fire, the system will still work. A really cool attribute to our system is that we can turn the speaker on and manage it through a mobile app, or we can do it on a computer. With a mobile app, that gives the stakeholders, I guess, freedom and capability, and it's a unique solution where if you're sleeping in the middle of the night and you need to wake up and activate the system, you don't have to drive in or call somebody to press the button. You can do it yourself. And the other advantage with this type of cloud-based solution is we can provide different levels of user interface. So if we want to connect the solutions together, say the different cities, we can provide a like a super user type of password where only a couple of people may have that, and they can collaborate and activate each other's systems if you choose. And then we can provide a different level user where you can only see the speakers in that particular city or that zone or that group, and they can only activate that. And you can even go down to a simple version where you can only press a button either to do the maintenance for it or just the panic button. Basically, somebody in the 911 dispatch just presses an easy button, for lack of a better term. And this is kind of how it looks. So if you have it, you can get a message. It will provide, you can get an SMS mobile alert message to your cell phone, or you can activate the speaker, depending on which stakeholder you are. But if you're just a regular citizen and you apply for an app, you can get the same messages that are being provided out through the outdoor speaker. You can also get that on your cell phone. And I think you guys have a system already, probably like Everbridge, something like that, that already activates that. So that function, we can turn that on or we can turn it off. So in the future, if you ever want to turn on one of those systems, you can do that. So I mentioned that we're IPAWS certified. So we are fully WEA compliant. And the people that are using it right now are Newport Beach. They use the speakers and also the WEA, the IPAWS activation. In fact, they used it for general announcements for the COVID, and they also used it for general directions regarding some of the protests that have been going on. Another key component to this is we're CAP compliant, the Common Alerting Protocol. So that means that we can integrate with other companies, third-party companies that we need to, that are CAP compliant, to make a one integrated system. So here's just a couple of pictures of some systems that we can do. So in Laguna Beach, this is a picture of the city hall with the speaker kind of just above a parapet wall pointing down towards the city. And there's another speaker on the lifeguard tower, but you can't even see it. So we can kind of disguise some of the speakers if we need to. A lot of them that we proposed, we just put in general on 50-foot poles, telephone poles. And they look more similar to this, or we have a 360 version that we can put on top of a pole that gives 360-degree coverage. These speakers will provide about 120 to 180-degree coverage. You can see they're kind of directional in nature. Here's a system in Mill Valley. We put some speakers up in kind of the bell tower to kind of hide it, but it's providing 360-degree coverage. And here's some other speakers at a different location, just to give you an idea of how it would look. And Mike did a great job putting together some prediction modeling. So he kind of laid out the system for what we would, you know, ballpark what it would take to provide a solution for Kensington. Now, of course, we picked some locations, maybe in the middle we might have to move it or do something to change the permits, or if there's a permit required, or you know, maybe there's not an exact location in the middle of the circle. But they're pretty flexible where we can move them and you can still get pretty good coverage. Moving down to Berkeley, we have roughly 10 units that we kind of laid out. Those locations that we picked were parks, schools, the fire department, public buildings, something that the city would own. And the same thing we did with Oakland prediction model. And I believe that there are some existing sites that we took advantage of and try to use those. And then to kind of give you an idea of how it would look with all three, the combined cities, this kind of gives you a different coverage. So when I mentioned that you can provide a zone or a polygon, you can draw a polygon around an area and activate those speakers. So if we have a collaborative agreement with the three cities, if the super user, for example, wanted to activate a polygon in this area, they could do that, and that could even overlap on the system if it overlaps into a different city. And same thing with the geo-targeting. Anybody in that area that has a cell phone, if you choose to use that, those people in that area would get that specific message. So for example, you wanted to say, everybody in this area evacuate to the south, and then create another area up on the northern part and say, you know, shelter in place or evacuate to the north. You could do that very easily with multiple messages. So I made it very brief. Hopefully it's, you know, it's still interesting, and I'm open to any questions that you guys might have, or you know, if you want more detail, we can provide that.
Yeah, I have a question. This is Larry Nagel. At okay. the last meeting that we had with, I believe it was with Mike a couple of weeks ago, I asked the question, would we be able to hear these things in a windstorm? Because the only time we're going to use this system is when there's a wind event and a wind-driven event, as it were. And Mike had said something about that there would to be able to hear in a full-blown windstorm, it would probably take more like 9 speakers instead of the 3 that he had shown. Is that still the case, or what's the deal?
Yeah, that's a fair question. And you know, with wind, of course, you know, we're using sound, so of course wind will impact the external environment, will impact the sound and how far it carries significantly, depending on which way the wind's blowing. So if it's coming from, you know, the west to the east, you're going to get much better coverage on the east. The way that we've experienced this, you know, down in Newport Beach, for example, trying to cover the beach, the wind is constantly blowing off the ocean, and it's blowing it to the east, and you get better coverage there. So what we try to do is design the system at like an 80 dB level, and we're talking at about a 70 dB level, and 80 is, 10 dB higher, so you should get a better loudness, I guess, you know, you'd be able to hear it. Regarding the 9 units, Mike, if you're on, I can let you kind of explain that part of it.
Yeah, what we were talking about was that if you wanted the system designed for a very, very high wind event, like you and I talked about, we could do that. I mean, what I did was design it for, you know, what would be a normal day, you know, just to give you coverage where you would be able to use it in almost any day. But if you guys decide that you need me to design it for a high wind environment, we can do that. It's a modular system. And it might take, you know, I guessed at 9 because we didn't really have some specifics about what kind of wind event you wanted and how long it was going. But my point was that we can, if you tell me what parameters you want me to meet, we can give you suggestions and give you an idea of how many poles it would take. The 9 number was just simply off the top of my head based on how strong you said the wind was every event.
I do have one more thing to add, and we do have demo equipment, and we have a trailer that we do use. And if there is an environment, I know it's almost very difficult to predict, but if you know, we can bring the trailer up for a demonstration or a speaker, you know, a smaller portable speaker, and test it out real world. So that way everybody gets to see it and hear it and see what the environment will, how it will impact the sound. Well, that's a good way to kind of kick the tires.
Yeah, we'd certainly, of course, look forward to your coming to take a look at the topography to see just whether for other reasons, 3 is the right number or 4 or whatever. I know Larry talked about 80 to 100 mile an hour winds, but I'm looking for typical. I haven't been able to find numbers of more than about 40, 45, maybe 50 in Kensington itself, although 80 to 100 can be on top of Mount Diablo and some of the other hills surrounding, particularly going through the passes when we have the Diablo wind events, and those winds always come from the north, northeast. So I think more realistically, we're looking at wind events of 40 to 50, and the sound would be blowing out to the west and mostly downhill because that's just our topography.
Okay. I have a question.
Please.
For the 80 decibel circle, is that 80 decibels at the edge of your circle, or is that 80 decibels starting from the siren?
Fair question.
That would be within. Go ahead.
Go ahead, Mike.
No, that would be within the circle. You know, the if you can see the tower, you would be able to get the 80 dB. So one of the benefits of the LRAD technology is that you will be able to hear it at and understand it right next to the pole as well as out to the perimeter of the circle. You don't have a deterioration of the sound and the intelligibility within that circle.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Okay.
Anybody else?
Yeah, good questions.
I want to note to everybody that just talking back and forth with Mike, he was good enough to send me a sample contract. I think I got his email this morning or yesterday afternoon. I haven't had a chance to look through it, but I'm grateful for that. And you know, we'll circulate it so people can get an idea of what your terms and conditions are and what the service is provided. Can you tell us more about what's going on with Berkeley and Oakland? You're in talks with them about getting sirens, or are you just providing a model for them? Or
yeah, sure, I'll be happy to. So there's a couple things going on in Marin County. There's a with the wildfire prevention, there's the Measure C. So that money that is being raised, one of the components they can use is to allocate it for speakers. And so they went and did a vote, and they were successful in getting that passed, and they're setting it up right now. The city of Berkeley just did and I don't know if Keith May is on, but he just mentioned that something similar is being proposed, and with a similar type of Measure C. So they went out and did a survey, and it sounded like it came back favorable. And so they're writing language to add an additional tax to provide additional fire equipment. And one of those is the Genesis LRAD speaker solution. And so they're working on building that up, and we'll see. Hopefully, everything goes through.
Well, that would be kind of cool if they're, and especially if Oakland chimes in, because then we'd have a very strong, north-south component to the, wildfire urban interface. And the intriguing thing about that is the coordination of control. Of course, we're between two counties, Kensington's in Contra Costa, and they're in Alameda. But the idea that these systems, although running independently, could really coordinate with each other it just seems like a great possibility.
Yeah, one thing that I do know that is going on. So Newport Beach, the city of Irvine, and Laguna Beach, they're all in Orange County, but they have a MOU put together, and the emergency managers, they help cover each other when one of them's gone. So the same concept that you're talking about is what they've been talking about, so that they have a capability or an access to at least support the other one of the cities if somebody was to take a vacation or for some reason somebody can't make some appointment. They can rely on each other.
Yeah, and I'm sure that Larry and Officer Harms can confirm, but whenever we've talked about emergencies like this, the control is really, really regional. It kind of supersedes typical county and other jurisdictional lines, doesn't it?
I have a question, Kevin.
Go ahead.
Thank you. I'm just curious, when you mentioned that Berkeley and Oakland would be putting ballot measures on to increase their taxes for this purpose. I'm wondering, for our situation, like, obviously there's the one-time startup cost, the capital cost to get everything in place. But what are the ongoing annual costs to monitor and maintain a system like this once it's in place?
Yeah, so we have a couple of options. We have a service level agreement and an AIA, an annual inspection agreement. And if we didn't send them to you, we can get you those agreements. But the service level agreement is basically, it's an annual fee, not very expensive. It's somewhere anywhere, depending on how many units and stuff like that. But it ranges somewhere $3,000 to $10,000. And the service on that is you get automatic updates. We get free monitoring of the system. If as many training sessions as you want. So like, for example, if you want to train somebody else up, or if you have a question on how to activate it, or if it's it's operational 24/7. So if there is an issue, and you know, for example, it does happen where somebody gets nervous and they need to call, they can call our service line and we can walk them through how do you send a WIA message, or can we verify this, that everything is working, or, and we will monitor it. And if something goes wrong, we'll alert you. And if you buy the AIA package, the annual inspection package, we'll go and fix it. So the inspection package is to go once a year to check out the system, but it also includes if there's something wrong with the system, we will go and take care of it so that it's operational 24/7.
Kevin, this is Dave.
Yeah, please jump in, Dave.
And then following up on that, what type of warranty do you provide for these systems?
Yep, we provide a one-year standard warranty for the system. And if you buy that, the SLA package is, everybody has bought it. I don't see why you wouldn't get it, because it's such a useful feature. If you do that, then from a warranty point of view, it's really, we maintain it. The things you would have to check is batteries, and they usually last 3 to 5 years or longer. And then potentially an active god where a lightning strike hits it or something and it's unrepairable, then that would not be covered. Or if, somebody, for example, was malicious, or, an accident, or drove into the, the pole, or damaged it, something like that, that would not be covered either. So,
but and the SLA is a separate cost in addition to the service cost, or are they built in?
Yes. So I should explain it better. The SLA is a service level agreement. So that is the annual software that includes the cloud-based software. If you go to the satellite, it includes the satellite fees, and it includes our 24/7 online remote service support. The AIA agreement, that's, people will take it and people won't, depending on their level of comfort. That the AIA agreement is where we physically come out and do work on the system for you. So if there's something wrong with the system for any reason, we'll come out and fix it for you. We don't have to call you and walk you through it, which is another possibility. Some people choose that, is we can identify, say that there's something wrong, like power went out and power kicked back on and the solar's not charging. The service would, if you wanted to and did not choose the AIA agreement, we would walk you through how to fix that. Maybe it's a quick reboot, or maybe you see you need a new fuse. With the AIA agreement, we do it all for you.
And is the AIA agreement a lump sum, or based on how many towers you have or speakers, or?
Yeah.
So it's an
It's based on how many towers you have, and it's an annual fee. Yes.
And how expensive is that? Just what's the general range?
Yeah, I'll give you it depends on how far our service group has to go. But for example, in Newport Beach, they have 3 towers. It's $10,000.
Okay.
A year.
Okay. Thank you. That's close enough. Thank you.
Okay.
I had one other question. Did you say that Oakland is also pursuing a Measure C, or was that only Berkeley?
I know of Berkeley. I'm not aware of Oakland. Mike, do you know?
Yeah, Oakland told me that they were doing something similar, but that it has not been fleshed out quite to that extent. But their intention is to do the same sort of thing. They're looking at a variety of different funding choices, from some state grants, some federal grants, as well as filling in the gaps with some sort of homeowner additional funding. And they're not sure what that exactly would look like. Everybody would just, they're looking at the different ways that they can pay for this critical need. And it could be much like Marin did, where it's a countywide measure, or it could be utilizing some grants or some other funding revenue within the city or the county.
Katie, have you got something to offer? I know you've been looking into this a lot. If you want to say something, you should unmute.
Can you hear me? Can you hear me?
Yes.
Oh.
Yes.
No, I the questions that I was going to ask Lisa and David have already covered them, so I'm quite happy. Yeah.
Okay, Peter, Paul, what have you got?
Actually, I do have a question. Now these things will require permits and a number of things like along those lines. Will you folks be of any help to us procuring those, or what level of assistance can we expect?
Sure. What we can do is we can give you the drawings, the documentation of what our system would be, like how it would look. For example, when we do a site survey, we would take pictures of the location, and sometimes it's not the best, but we can kind of try to put a picture on it to make it be what they look like, answer the questions with the installer saying the power is going to be pulled to here, the cabinet is going to be on this. So we can help you put the paper or documentation together. The thing that we can't do is, and the part where we run into problems is to actually get, for example, if we put it on the water district, we can't contact the water district and ask them to help us. We would need somebody like you to champion those permits and put it all through and set up the meetings and submit our proposal. We can't, you know, we can support, but we can't actually do the official permitting. The people won't listen to us on that.
That brings up another question, Katie. I'm glad you brought that up. In terms of actually the installation of these things, depending on what they are, do you do installation drawings or footings and calculations for poles, or what kind of support, engineering support, do you provide?
Right. Good question as well. So we can provide basically the drawings of the equipment. What we do is we can, for example, all of our poles would be rated at 100 mile an hour wind loads that we would provide. And we can walk you through with the installer on the site walk of what kind of equipment is needed. And we can also kind of figure out where the locations are, what the equipment would be. And then when we do a submittal, we have data sheets, some drawings of what the, you know, what the actual equipment is. So we do have that. Now, the things we don't, you know, just to be very clear, if we're gonna put it on a roof, you know, it's not our, we're not a structural engineer, you know, company. So we wouldn't know what roof we can put it on or that kind of stuff. So if we do that, if there is a concern, then, you know, whoever's roof it is would have to give us permission. If we are going to put it on a building or something like that, these are small speakers. They're less than 20 pounds each, or if you put the 360 all together, it's less than 200 pounds. So they're not very heavy. So you're not going to, you know, I don't think you're going to break anything, but we're not structural engineers on that side of it. So
I see that Chief Welsh has joined us. And so Chief, if I can ask you to unmute, if you could, thank you. We just wanted to talk to someone who's having direct experience with these devices. And since you're in our area and Mill Valley has an even weirder topography than Kensington, we thought you'd be a great person to help us out.
Thank you, sir. I'm in transit, so I apologize for any extra noise, but happy to answer any questions you have.
Well, maybe we could start by what kind of considerations led Mill Valley to adopt this system?
Okay, great. So following the conflagrations of 2017 that affected our friends to the north so greatly, Sonoma, Napa, Lake County, the City of Mill Valley did an introspective examination. We came up with 6 points that we felt we needed to improve, following a gap analysis. And this was communication was definitely one of them. And we had an older air raid siren type product for a number of years, since probably following the Oakland Hills fire. And it was time to upgrade them. We saw that as a gap. But then we also saw the need to have more intelligible communication. And so we found this company to have that technology to be able to provide instructions, to be able to provide somewhat real-time instructions if necessary throughout the entire life cycle of a disaster. And so that's why we chose this company. So as I said before, we had 6 sites that were built out. They were built out to with those sirens. So we had already gone through neighborhood vetting with the locations. They were already well accepted within our community. And so that was not going to be an issue as far as where we were going to place them. But one of our partner agencies in Southern Marin, of which I'm the deputy chief of now, due to a shared arrangement, they do have to go through that process. And so they're actively looking at that right now and going through that process. So as far as implementation and installation, we also wanted to hear from other agencies. So we corresponded with a beach community down in Southern California and found them to be very helpful with the nuts and bolts of the system. And then it was about installation, which the company made extremely easy. I believe they hired a third service, worked with our project manager, and had the system up and installed within relatively short order once the council had decided to purchase it. There was some training that they were helpful with as well to ensure that we could use it. It was very important to me that we had a redundant system that was first to be operated by Marin County Office of Emergency Services, as they are tied in with law enforcement who conduct all the evacuations, but then to have some redundancy in the system with our local police department, our local fire department, to ensure that we could activate the sirens if needed. And that has worked quite well, actually. But we continue to train our staff and to be able to use it. The company was extremely responsive to us with regards to automation of testing. They were able to, through their computer engineer magic people, able to set up a system that will test the system once a month so that we don't have to do it. It's automated. And then we just have the community notified And then we seek input from the community through a number of surveys and things, and we're happy to share that information with you if it's helpful. We found that our system isn't all the way built out and that we are looking to close some gaps. Some gap closure will be additional horns in certain strategic areas, and it might even be additional poles. And so we're evaluating that right now. And as more partners come on, we find that helpful to actually find synergies with our neighbors of where we can put poles and enhance our communication system. And then the final thing is that we went with the satellite downlink. That was very important. And if you experienced the PSPS recently, you'll probably agree with me that satellite communication in this case would be superior to a dead cell phone. So we wanted some redundancy there. And so that was important. I would encourage that you look at the solar charging system. So we've had to set up a relationship where we charge, we replace batteries, and we're going to actually buy more batteries so they can be charged at our stations and then installed. But I think the solar option, if I'm looking back on it, would have been a better option. So with that, I will be quiet and let you ask any questions.
This is, I know Officer Harms has a question.
Can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Can you hear me now? I clicked it again.
You're fine. Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Assuming the board agrees that they would like to utilize this resource, has there been any previous issues in installation from big organizations? In other words, I'm kind of envisioning, it's not my call, but if East Bay Mud would have a problem, have you ever had issues where companies are reluctant to let you use their land, or has that ever really come up yet?
Well, it's coming up now. So like I said, our sites were already installed and they were, you know, outfitted with an air horn type system. And so we didn't have to go through that, but we are going to have to go through that now. And so that has to do with dealing with neighborhoods to ensure that they understand, you know, the importance of the issue and getting them to accept it. And then we are anticipating working with the water district here, but we haven't had issues within the past. So we're not anticipating issues, but I could see where issues could arise where we might have to select a new location.
Okay. And then last question. If it's approved and this is something they want, I would imagine outreach or educational component is critical. So when people hear it, they know exactly what it means, correct?
Yeah, that's absolutely correct. So what we did was we put together a video that you can find on our website that kind of introduces it to the community. And then we would include it in our regular correspondence with the community through email and mail postcards and things of that nature. And then so we socialized it those ways. So when people first heard it, they kind of knew to go to the website and learn about it. But yeah, that's very essential.
Okay, thank you.
Chief, who did you say, what was the company that installed your alert system?
You know, I wish I could say off the top of my head, but I believe it was a third service contracted by the LRAD folks, yeah, or Genesis folks. They might have a better answer on that.
Yeah, it's our partner, RPL Electric. They've done the services. They're also based out of California. And they're our partner that has done a lot of the installations in California today.
And just got, just to work. Okay.
I was just going to say, no, we I found them very, very helpful.
Yeah, I just wanted to say that we can do this in two separate ways. We can do this as a soups and that kind of a project where we do all the installation, we get it all up and going, and we basically hand you the keys. We can also do it if it's the way that you want to do what I call parts and smarts, which would mean that we provide you with the equipment, we provide you with the drawings and the assistance on getting it installed, but you might have your own Public Works, for example, some cities will use their own Public Works to do the installation, and we just provide them with the technical instructions as well as the equipment. So we can do it either way. If you had, you know, you wanted to do the installation part with one of your existing city partners.
I'm particularly intrigued, Chief Welsh, by the problems with cell phone coverage and what happens when the power goes off. You know, many of us have backup batteries and the like, but you know, we have a lot of systems. We have reverse 911. We've got the county agency. We've got Nixle. We have all these things, and that's all great because I think we generally believe in throwing everything we can at the problem, figuring that, you know, some systems are going to fail some people and some are going to fail sometimes, but, you know, hopefully something will get through most or all the time. And during the PG&E planned outages, I noted that the figures for the outages of cell phone towers in Marin and similar areas were extremely high. And that, that to me would have been, if I were in your shoes, a principal stimulant for getting a system that has its own power source.
Yeah, so the backup batteries will last 72 to 96 hours. But we ran up against some funding issues and a desire to get the system in quite quickly. We were given two options. One was the solar option, of which I would look at again, or two is to have some minor amendments do it at the pole, and then we would just put a gas-powered generator there to charge the batteries, or three, which was we just have an extra bank of batteries and we swap them out. But yeah, that's probably the weakest of our system, and the Genesis folks helped us through that, but we just found financially that it was more prudent to go the way we did. So that's kind of where we're at.
That's terrific. Has anybody got any other questions for the chief so that we can let him get back to his work?
Go ahead.
Aside from fire alerts and evacuation, do you have any other alerts like earthquake early warning that you have for the Marin County residents or Marin residents?
No, we don't actually. But I will say that we would find this system to be very helpful as you work through the life cycle of a disaster. It will not only be useful for just early alerts and warnings, but it will be useful to communicate to, let's say, a blacked out community about where fresh water is available, where they can find, start processes for insurance and things of that nature, where they can report, you know, loved ones, issues in the neighborhood and things like that. So we definitely see it available for that. But as far as it linked to earthquake alerts and warnings, I have not heard that, and nor are we set up for that.
Thank you.
Just as a side note, we are currently talking to Menlo Park about tying their earthquake system into their trailer, as well as a couple of firehouses. They're currently using it where when the shake alert goes off, it automatically opens their fire doors. And they are currently working through adding that same notification to come out of their poles. So that is a particular sensor that we do have the ability to integrate into our system.
Chief, a quick question. You have indicated, I think, that if you had to do it again, you would have gone with solar. Was your original choice not to go because of the cost?
Yeah, we elected to go without solar. However, looking back, I wish I would have integrated that in as a battery tender type thing. So now we're doing it in a more laborious fashion where we're changing batteries out So yeah, that's one thing that I wish I would do again. Or maybe if I save my shekels, I'll go after it down the way as a retrofit.
Thank you. Any more questions for the chief? Well, we want to thank you very much, Chief Welsh, for coming by and giving your perspective on things, because the questions that you had to deal with are things we have to deal with too, and we very much appreciate your perspective.
All right. I wish you luck on your decision. Thank you for having me.
Thank you very much, Chief.
Take care.
Over and out. Normally when we've talked or when we've looked into the costs of sirens, and our fire chief did this and our members have looked into this too, we usually get a figure of about $50,000 per siren or device on average. Can you talk with us a bit about what this system might cost us?
Sure, Mike. Mike, I think you're on mute.
You don't look like you're on mute, but I think you are.
Yeah, there you go. How's that? No, when I did the original quote that I gave you, it was for a complete turnkey system, and it was about $379,000 for the existing sites that I proposed. And again, that was the providing brand new poles, having us do all the installation, and with, I believe it was with satellite. I don't have it in front of me, but it was designed to be the best product. And again, it is modular, so we can add pieces and take pieces away once we start doing our site survey and we look at your particular funding.
So that was,
does that answer what you're looking for?
That was $379,000 for three towers.
Yes. I think the quote I gave was $379,970.66.
Okay, and that includes solar power batteries? Or maybe you don't recall.
Yeah, and an estimated for the installation.
And that's the installation. Okay. So that's mm-hmm. that's basically, you turn the key and you give us the key and the instruction manual and the support.
Correct.
Correct.
Okay. Who do we need to hear from? Who's got questions? Okay, then terrific. We can proceed with this. We'll discuss this more at our next meeting and see what if any recommendation we want to bring to the full board. If that's okay with everybody.
Well, I want to thank everybody for taking the time to listen to our talk and. I encourage you, if you have additional questions, and I know inevitably once we get off the phone, some things come up, but I'm always available here to answer your questions, and I'd like to just continue the dialogue, and we'll work through this together.
Yeah, thanks. And I think is the next step, by Chris, for someone to come up and actually look over the topography and do a drive around?
Yes, I that would probably be a good choice when you're ready for us all to be, close together, or at least, drive around in separate cars and be 6 feet apart at these individual sites.
As the minute taker, I have a request. Would it be possible for us to get a copy of the PowerPoints that you gave us? And second request is, I see that there are two Mike Shanks on the form, and I don't think Mike Shanks. So who is the one who's not called Mike Shanks? What is his name?
I am Chris Roller. So I use Mike Shanks' Zoom notification.
Chris Roller?
So it's Chris, yeah. Chris Roller. The last name is spelled like roller skate. R-O-L-L-E-R.
Terrific. Thank you. Okay, guys.
Well, thank you.
I think we're good for now. This has been extremely helpful.
Larry, thank you for your time.
Kevin, will you give Larry the PowerPoint, or do you want me to send it to him separately?
Yes, that's right. You sent it to me yesterday. If you haven't changed it, I'll just send that to him.
That's fine. Okay. Thank you so much for inviting us.
Thank you, guys. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Okay, people. That's terrific. If possible, let's see. Does anybody have any suggestions about future actions or impressions, things that you'd like to proceed with on this?
Yeah, this is Peter. I assume that if we move forward on this, we're going to need to get competitive contract bids. Are there other firms that provide a comparable alert system? And who are they, and should we be talking to them as well?
Katie, can you speak to that, please?
Yeah, I don't have on that. I don't have my notes in front of me. I did speak to some. I spoke to the people at Berkeley, and there are two other outfits. And when one of the outfits was contacted several times, they never bothered to respond at all to Berkeley. And then there's the group. I think it's what ITL, something like that. And they had done. They had done the installations in San Francisco back in time. Well, San Francisco, all their warning systems now have been shut down to be redone. So they're going to be down for about 4 years. They don't seem to be, this other app doesn't seem to be very active. That's why I put most of the emphasis on Genesis. They seem to be the outfit that's really covering the California area. So that's all. As I say, I don't have my notes in front of me now.
Did you tell me that you talked with Keith May at Berkeley Fire, and that he did the same research and came up with the same?
Exactly.
Okay. Yeah.
Exactly.
So it may be the Genesis is actually the only suitable game in town.
Yeah, and it does make sense that if all the other areas around here are looking into having them do the installations, that we have some like contiguous type of warning system. It just makes sense, but maybe not to you.
Well, Kevin, I don't think it precludes you from sole sourcing this if you spec it such that Genesis would be the only one that would fit your conditions or your requirements.
I think my sense is with the university, when we have to look for vendors, it's the same thing. I mean, you go out and you look, but if there's only one outfit that can actually handle the job suitably, then you really don't have a choice, and then that's permissible. But I think we have some more talking to do. I definitely want them to scope out the lay of the land here. Of course, that's kind of difficult under the present circumstances, but I think things are going to get better, and we have talked about ways that people can be guided around town without necessarily getting too close to anybody. But I would like them to see the terrain, and we need kind of a harder edge on this.
I've got, let's see, did Larry leave us?
No, I'm here.
Oh, you're here. Who's missing? Oh, no, everybody's, I got it now. Sorry. I've got the terms and conditions they sent, and I would be happy to circulate those if it would be of interest to people, because I think that we need explicit contracts super getting into.
Yeah, I would be very interested. I'm a little shocked that the price of sirens has gone from $50,000 a tower to $125,000 a tower. I think we really need to look into this.
May I ask, Larry, where did you come up with the, or that, where did you get the $50,000? Where did that come from? Was that a quote that you had received from somebody, or was that just hearsay? Hello?
Larry, you're muted. Did you hear Katie's question?
I did. I thought you were the one who quoted 50,000. I thought maybe you could say where that came from.
Oh, when Mike Bagoni, about the first meeting of the fire board, when he was chief, he had looked into it. I believe that's a price that he quoted. But recall, Larry, this also includes the poles and the installations and basically the whole nine yards. We wouldn't have to do anything, which frankly, given our small staff and the myriad things that have to happen, would probably wind up saving us money.
No, yeah, it also includes the solar and the satellite feature.
This is Paul. I have a question with regard to money too. I was just wondering, does this fee of $379K include the $10K for the AIA and another 3-10 for the service level agreement?
Thank you. I don't have a broken down thing. That was just a number that Mike sent me yesterday, but I'm sure he'll break it down so that we can see what this is entailing, because it is probably more than anticipated. And on the other hand, it's about half the price of less than half the price of a typical Kensington home.
Yeah.
And I think if it can save one Kensington home, we've probably be considerably ahead of the game, not to mention any lives. So I don't know. We can talk about it more. Should we just consider that what we ought to do is to have have them proceed and give us an itemized estimate and have them do a drive-through, and we can assemble other questions before we talk about bringing it to the full board? Does that make sense?
I think that's a good way to go. They obviously can't give us an estimate until they've seen the area.
Yeah, because it might be that they need four devices. We'll have to see.
I would love to bring them up here during a Diablo wind event and let them drive around during the wind event because that's when we really need to be able to hear these things.
Well, you're right that that's the most extreme condition, but we can have bad fires with lesser winds too. But I think the worst case scenario you've got is fine. I'm sure that they've worked in places that have 40, 50 mile an hour winds before, which is about the max that I can find that we get here. Particularly, they're putting sirens in Newport Beach and stuff. They must have pretty heavy winds sometimes. Anyhow. I think we have what we need, and we should move on a little bit if we can. Is that okay? I see several people are muted, so I can't hear what you're thinking. But if you're okay with this, can you just let me know? We'll proceed.
Yeah, proceed.
Proceed.
I would just want to add that Kevin, it might be when you're talking to them and they come to the site and look around, you know, it's good to get as good an idea as you can, but there within that, there may still be a range, because if there's options on not putting in full poles or, you know, some other technique of attaching these to buildings, you know, I think in the end, there may be a range of costs for installation that we can reflect when we go to the full board.
I think that's an excellent suggestion. I mean, as you point out, they're talking about full coverage, you know, soup to nuts here, new poles, everything. If they put it on existing structures, that presumably would be a lot easier.
Right.
And maybe even more accessible, which would be better for future service. Okay, terrific. I'll let's take that as consensus, huh? And we'll go from there. Then maybe what we can do. Okay, so our next item is to talk about the Zone Haven that has contacted us about a contract for software services, and we haven't actually received anything in writing on this. I know, so I forwarded, and it's in the packet, several things related to this, including yesterday. Okay, so there's the map. Has everybody seen the map of the polygons?
Yes.
Okay, yeah. And so I could have just been not listening, but I can't find any place a statement that says that when we were installing this, that we're also installing it for all of El Cerrito. Does anybody remember explicitly being told that we were paying for El Cerrito as well?
No.
Oh, I do. I think when you first discussed this, it was, my recollection was El Cerrito was included. Now, I don't think you ever agreed to pay for El Cerrito, but El Cerrito was certainly part of this. I mean, that's the way I remember it being presented to the board. And that's, you know, it's obvious the chief, Pagoni, weighed in, and then the principal individual associated with the fire department is an El Cerrito, you know, fireman. So
the presentation was made by our battalion chief, Joe Grupalo.
Right.
But there wasn't anything in his PowerPoint presentation that suggested El Cerrito or suggested that we were going to map them too. And I have never heard anything about El Cerrito being billed or contributing anything to this project.
Well, I would say, Kevin, that it was at least always my understanding that El Cerrito would be mapped as part of this. That's the way I interpreted the original presentation.
Okay.
Well, is the question now, not so much whether or not it was agreed upon at the time to also map El Cerrito while they were mapping Kensington? Or is the question, did we pay not only for Kensington, but for El Cerrito as well? Or did El Cerrito kick in and pay their own way? Is that more or less what we're trying to find out here?
Well, yeah, see, this is the problem, because we have no paperwork. But when Joe presented this to us, it was going to be a pro bono thing for Kensington. I remember him saying that, and also that they were giving this to us at a discount, and so Janice asked that $10,000 be set aside, and we agreed to that. But no one said anything about El Cerrito pay. Now, I don't care if El Cerrito pays or not. I just, you know, and I think that if this project works, it's a small enough sum for what we have available that, you know, it's all good. I mean, because after all, if we map El Cerrito districts directly to the north of us, you know, that will potentially be an aid to us. You know, but we occupy about a fifth to a sixth of the zone that's been mapped. So
That's okay. It's just, I don't have a problem with the system per se. I just think we got a problem with having no paperwork on anything.
Joe?
There's a transference of $10,000 from Kensington to Zonehaven. So where's the contract? What does it say in the contract?
Well, we don't have a contract, and as $5,600 so far has been paid to them, $5,000 for the work they did, which was not itemized, but you know, as the chief said, it's partly pro bono. They're giving it to us at a considerable discount.
But still, $10,000 was transferred from our hands to Zonehaven's hand.
It's not correct. It's only a budget item. It's a line item. We've paid $5,600 to them, and that's the extent so far.
With no paperwork saying what the money is for.
Well, it's true, and I think one of the things that began to concern me is that we don't have a sense of the scope of work, or you know, whether they're insured or liability, and what that, you know, what the scope of work in the contract actually stands for. And so it was a surprise when
there is no contract.
Exactly. So it was a surprise when Joe wrote to me and Larry a couple weeks ago and said that he wanted us to authorize $5,000 to be paid to Zonehaven for software, and he said to us that $5,000 for 3 years, but then he wrote a memo to Mary 2 days later that said it was $5,000 for 1 year. So you know, once again, we have no paper on this, and I'm just concerned that we're not, as a district, exercising our fiduciary responsibility. We need to ask for paperwork, I think, for anything future, and we need to know what it's going to do. Now, for this reason, I added this kind of PowerPoint thing that begins on page 11 of the packet and goes up through page 20. And this seems to be an advertisement in many ways. They're talking about an evacuation management platform for the whole county. But it would seem that the whole county would have to subscribe to Zonehaven before you could do this. And so this seems like it's more a workflow to get business from the entire county in order. And then there's something about a communication system in it, training and support, but it really doesn't give us information about that specifically. So I would, as I noted in this kind of sheet that I included in this, I would like to see Zonehaven come to our board and explain what they're doing and to talk more about this and to, you know, agree to provide paperwork for a potential arrangement if we are doing further business with them. I mean, I hope that's not objectionable, but I'd like to hear what the rest of you think.
Well, I was under the impression we were going to have Joe come to this meeting and tell us what this was about. That I obviously was wrong.
No, I didn't ask Joe to this meeting because I think, and I'd like your input on this, but I think that Joe being the representative or acting as the sales rep for this company puts all of us in a difficult position, because we shouldn't be grilling our battalion chief about what a company is or their business practices.
I think it's an uncomfortable position to put him in. I think he's been great at representing this system as far as he can, but I think we need to hear from the company, and I think that's the best way we can proceed. But I want to hear what other people think.
I think that's a great idea. My understanding is that this $5,000 software service is not for the polygons. This is for an evacuation project, an evacuation registration for people who need assistance in being evacuated, not having anything, well, not associated with polygons, but it's not part of the polygon project. Am I wrong?
I have no idea because we have absolutely no details on it.
What product do we have presently for what we've paid for?
Well, they set up this polygon model, and I guess it can be or is, but I don't know, controlled by somebody, and we haven't been able to figure out who that is. Maybe it's the emergency office in El Cerrito. Maybe it's, I don't think it's the county.
I can tell you it's the county, and it is operational, and any battalion chief in Kensington or El Cerrito can call the county and have them evacuate Kensington, El Cerrito by zones. That's all up and running.
And was that a manifestation of when we were sitting in the board meeting that time and we took out our phones and we were alerted?
That was that. Yes, that and the meeting before that where we passed the resolution to give $5,000 to establish the zones.
Okay.
But that's the community warning system, Kevin, you're talking about having been contacted via the cell phone. Yeah, that's a county thing. That has nothing to do with the polygons.
Okay, so this is what I like clarity on, whether it's a separate system and whether it's separately controlled. I think I understand also from Joe, who wrote us, that they're going to do, I think they're going to try to test this system sometime in August. But we have...
They sent us all email about that, did they not?
Some of us. I'm not sure who got it. It might be the people who were involved in the parking thing with Kate Rausch and Joya's office. So I think we're going to have to look into this farther. But I would like to ask the board if they, as a whole, would invite Zone Haven to come and talk with us about their system and their contracts and their, you know, the things that that we need for administrative reasons, if nothing else. Larry's already said he thinks that's a good idea. Do we have any views from anybody else?
I'm awesome.
I almost wanted to say,
Governor. I gotta go back on. I can't hear
you. Governor, now. Yeah, you got.
Well, yeah, I just think it makes sense, but Kevin, I mean, there's a lot of loose ends here that I think you wanted. Know what's going on. For example, that apparently that notice about the evacuation drill on August 1st, I mean, has that been talked about at the board? And who originated that?
This is the first I've heard of it. I just don't know. It may be that it's coming through the fire and police departments. I don't know. Larry, do you know who, did Joe originate it? I guess it's probably down to him, huh?
Well, I've seen email from both Chief Pagoni and Chief Capallo. I thought this was a joint exercise with the police department. So I think the police department also knows about it. And I think you're right. It does have something to do with this parking as well. It's all evacuation. And that was a meeting we were going to have next Tuesday, but now I see that's been postponed until July 9th.
Oh, is there a new one? Oh, okay.
I can answer that. You guys there?
Yep.
I believe that originated from Joe. He and I had a conversation yesterday, and I believe La Moraga or La Mirinda area was doing an exercise similar, and I think Joe would be the source that's talking about it. We, from the PD perspective, I'm meeting him tomorrow at 10, but at this point, it's not an evacuation for the PD yet. We're still working on that. So Joe, I believe, would have that answer.
Okay, so then this would be the last thing this is the second to last page in the packet, and it's the next door post adjusted for Kensington. This came from Joe, so that would correlate with what we're hearing so far. That looks like a virtual evacuation exercise. It says community warning system. It doesn't say anything about polygons. But we'll learn more about that, I guess. I guess we'll know more about it, but the important thing is it's a virtual evacuation, meaning the exercise will consist of notifications only and will not involve residents actually evacuating. So I expect we're going to hear a lot more about this. Meanwhile, if everyone is in on this, why don't we ask the board to ask Zonehaven to come and talk to us? Okay, hearing Danielle.
I think that's a great idea because I'm still kind of confused on services that Zonehaven provides and also the services that also come with the Genesis stuff. It sounds like there might be a little overlap, or maybe does Zonehaven dovetail with the Genesis installation, which I would imagine, because if Berkeley is using them and El Cerrito is using them?
Well, we'd hope so. And we actually asked, as I mentioned, that our traffic consultants, we asked if their data would be compatible with Zonehaven system, and they said yes, it would. And they tried to contact Zonehaven several times but got no response. And I would like to know whether Zonehaven can, and if they intend to, incorporate these data, because as Larry said, what Zonehaven's using is actually default data that they've pulled off like a Garmin map, because there weren't any maps available of Kensington to the scale and precision that they needed, and that's why our traffic guys did all those mappings. And I would hope that those could be integrated for a better model of traffic flow. But anyway, let's ask the board to ask Zonehaven to come, and we'll find out what all this is about, because this new system of signing up the whole county, I mean, if that works, that would be very sweeping. Okay, good. Then we're only a few minutes late. So maybe
amazing.
Maybe, I know, right? Maybe.
Hey, Kevin, it's Paul. Can I make us a little bit later? Just ask one question there about this post on indoor next door at Kensington. They only refer to using the CWS. I mean, it's obviously just a notification exercise, which is a good idea. But as you said earlier, the more channels we have to use to get information out, the better. Do you think it's possible to at least suggest that Nixle be incorporated into this exercise? Yeah, all they have to do is get permission from the fire chief or police chief, whoever it's given to.
Yeah, and Zonehaven, if it's possible, they should have a test of the system. We don't know that it's ever actually been tested here per se, and no. Don't know that it's actually been used in a real emergency anywhere, because on their website, you can't get any information about it. So, I just think we kind of want, I agree with you. We need to ask more things, but I don't know, maybe Officer Harms can check with Joe Crupolo and see whether
they can test several of these systems at once, or whether it's going to be one thing.
Sure. I'm meeting him tomorrow. I'll ask. You're talking about merging NXL with early warning system?
Well, the NXL county warning system and the polygon, the Zone Haven polygon system, we should see if they all work.
Okay.
Coordinated. I think that's a great idea.
Okay. Yeah, I'll ask him tomorrow.
Okay. Super. I want to say that Officer Harms has been busy as a worm on concrete, you know, just running all over the town here, getting things done. And I'll just run through a few things. He can catch me up on stuff. But we went to the cemetery last Friday and talked with their manager, Scott Pennington. Very receptive, just to bring people up to date, although I think we know this, they are very receptive to having their sunset gate open and taking a huge load of traffic to the west. We determined that there are two sites from the road down to the Fairmont crossing where we need signs just to make sure people are okay there. They have a small red sign at one of the places, but not the other. And they have agreed to allow us to install exit signs. I found a couple of good white, highly reflective, diamond 3M grade exit signs that we can get installed. They also suggested, and we agree, to put an evacuation sign up at the sunset gate so that people will know it's an evacuation route and point down through the cemetery. And we're working on trying to procure. He gave Officer Harms a key to the locks for the gates. And we are now looking into who in the neighborhoods might be able to run and open those gates in case of a warning. They could be warned and told to go and do it. Of course, Peter Liddell lives down there. Chris Deppe, who is of course the president of the police board, and is very concerned about traffic. He lives right down there, and we could get people like that to do it. So things are looking very good on the cemetery front. That's a very strange sentence, but I think it's true. And let's see, did that cover it, Brad?
That's the cemetery aspect, yes. There's a couple other developments, but yes.
Well, I just want to check on that. Okay, and then the other thing is the bollards. There are 8 bollards in town that we know about that are controlled by the county, and Officer Harms has worked with Fernando from the traffic engineer from the DPW, and the bollards are going to be removed. We're going to get chain across there with signs telling people it's an emergency exit only, but the chains can be removed by people in case of an emergency. And so that's proceeding, yeah?
Yes, I'm waiting for the final estimate. The estimate was for $2,600 total, and we can reduce that. We don't need 6 bollards. We're going to utilize the ones that are currently there, modify them for hooks, and he's going to weld them, the chains, to one side. So it should go down a couple hundred dollars at least. I'm waiting for that final estimate. So that can be purchased. I said, as soon as you give me the estimate, I'm going to forward it to you, Kevin, and let's proceed because we would be under the $5,000 threshold. I said, I want to move on it, and I want to move on it now. And he said he'd do it ASAP. So that's good. In regards to the bollards, there's
good.
I have a question about that. Just based on what you said, Officer Harris, does that mean that in lieu of chains, you'll be doing a removable bollard that has that's attached just to a plate on the ground? Was that what you were?
Yeah, it's on Windsor. The vehicles are facing out towards Leslie. That is the only location where we need to put in two brand new posts. So that would be the two posts, one chain going across to both with a hook.
I see.
So in case of emergency, you can just, anybody can take it off and flip it. The other side of the chain will be welded in permanently. In the middle of the chain will be a sign that states emergency evacuation route only. Violators will be prosecuted as per CDC section, I think it's 21460A. That way, in case of emergency, they can remove it. In regards to liability, and I mentioned this at another board meeting, it's the equivalent of someone doing an illegal U-turn and then getting broadsided and then say, I'm going to sue the city. And then the police show up and we say, no, there's an illegal no U-turn sign here. Therefore, the liability defaults right back to the driver. Same concept. Anybody can remove it. However, in case of emergency, we're not going to be able to get a hold of Fernando or the police and have them show up and then jerry-rig it. It could mean the difference between life and death. So I think the cost-benefit analysis of having a permanent bollard there, especially during fire season, red flag day, I'd like them to come down. Sure. The good news is that would be like July and August when there's no school. So realistically, you're looking at September, October into November. After that, when it starts raining, then we can put the permanent bollards back.
I see. Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. You bet.
Yeah, so
there's a couple other developments, but I'm not sure if we want to go in regards to the Sixth Street.
We do. We want to talk about the neighborhood meetings.
Okay.
Parking is going to be changed in some ways in some neighborhoods. The three one block cul-de-sacs that are down York and St. Albans, and what's the third one?
Windsor.
They have parking going toward the dead end, and it would be a lot safer to have it the other way. And so an example of what we'd like to do is to have a couple of us go and put flyers in the neighborhood that there's going to be a meeting in a few days to talk about traffic evacuations and the danger and tell people about those things. And then when we're done with that, then we inform them that this is going to mean parking changes in the neighborhood so that they understand the public safety need to change the parking. It's not just a whim, or a convenience. It's a real necessity in case of disaster. So we see this going in a, and that kind of put the flyer out, get the information out, get people the brochures on evacuation from the county. We're going to order 500 or 1,000 of them to pass out to people to make that happen. And for that, we of course need volunteers to help with signing people up at these things for Nixle and the county warning system if they don't have it already on their phones, and to just take any other information that might be important for evacuation. And Officer Harms suggested on the basis of some models of in Danville and elsewhere that people who are volunteers should be issued vests that indicate that they're doing that. So I have actually designed and ordered 24 of these vests that for all of the committee members and other people in town who would be involved in either emergency evacuations or in these educational events. So people will know that everyone's, kind of official and a part of the scene and, can be there to ask questions and to help out if necessary. So we've got that going.
If I can elaborate on that. Volunteers are regarded as force multipliers. You can accomplish so much more with volunteers. It can be quick and efficient. And I'm going to be asking that the CERT members, and thank you, Kevin, for taking the initiative on getting the vests, that my objective is I'm going to go to the affected street with one or two volunteers so I can get it done quicker. We're going to generate a generic flyer stating on such and such date there's going to be a block party meeting. We would hit all the houses, ring the doorbells, step back, give them the flyer, leave it on their doorstep, Then the following week or the designated time, we would then have the meeting, like Kevin had said. On our perspective, that's considered community-oriented policing. And with today's age, I could use some help. So it's going to, I'm hoping to bring the neighborhoods together. And like Kevin said, then we would have one CERT member help the neighborhood sign up for the community warning system if they haven't given the flyer, the brochure that we're going to try and get more of. Give a generic synopsis briefing on the findings of the panel and the fire season and emergency evacuation route. So you're not blindsiding or you're getting them to buy into it. Then we'll have Q&A at the end. And then towards the end of it, then we'll show them the big picture of how this is going to affect their street. I'm reluctant to add red curbs at this point because you're going to have nothing but outreach or outcry rather. So I'm looking at phase one and phase two potentially. So the roads that we've identified make sense, and I'm waiting to hear back from Monesh Sen. Yesterday, Fernando and myself, or 2 days ago, drove around for 2 hours, and we identified the six streets. He then had his supervisor, and he showed up on a priority basis yesterday, checked it out. I called him this morning. He said, it looks good. As soon as I hear from Monesh, we're going to proceed forward on that. I don't know if you guys want the six streets because I don't want it to get out until it's official, or it's up to you. What do you think, Kevin? What do you guys think?
Let's hold it for a moment because nothing's been totally decided.
Exactly.
You guys, Monesh Sen is the head of the DPW, traffic division, and then Fernando is the chief engineer. Brad said CERT members, but I think you mean volunteers because they don't necessarily have to be CERT trained, but we're talking.
I'd like to have an orientation, get to know them. We are trying to have a volunteer program with the police department. I was a volunteer coordinator for a couple other police departments. They are invaluable. The problem is if you have volunteers, one way you vet them is you have a Citizens Academy first. They fill out an application. You get to know them. They get to know you. It's usually 6, 7, 8 weeks. At the end, they then get plugged in certain positions. The problem is with COVID, we can't plan anything. So here we are. So if we're going to have volunteers, my inclination was to use people that have already been vetted, if that's correct, with CERT. Is that right, Larry or Kevin?
Larry's been a captain.
Have been vetted for press, you mean? Or
no, vetted in terms of as a ambassador or representative of the fire department, they are cleared, correct?
That is correct. And in fact, they already have a vest and a hard hat to identify them. You don't really need to get them any equipment.
Well, the vest that Kevin took the initiative, we're probably going to want to use that, incorporate that to the PD volunteer branch once we get that going. So it's good to have them in advance. But yes, that would be the CERT members / volunteers and perfect.
So I have a question. How are you going to pull neighborhoods together outside and have these meetings during the pandemic?
If they want to meet, we're going to meet. Let's at the end of the cul-de-sac, they can stand 6 feet apart. If they don't feel comfortable, then their neighbor can tell them. But if their safety's at risk, and I'm still going to give the presentation, if one person shows up, then great. We plan on eventually, once it's approved and everybody's on the same page, and they all say, yes, these are the six identified roads this year, let's proceed. The community center is not open available yet, and it won't be. I confirmed that this afternoon until all phases of COVID have been, or we're back to normal. Right. So, however, the outdoor amphitheater is still available. So if we proceed forward, I'd like to have a videotape presentation of the, we can have one of the videos that we got from, I have several from Campfire and Paradise Fires that Joe gave me. You can have something like that in it, then a community-wide meeting. It can be videotaped and then downloaded to the Kensington Facebook page, you can read it. So if they don't feel comfortable going, they can then access the presentation so then they can see it remotely. So it's going to be a challenge, but improvise, overcome, and adapt will occur.
Okay.
You bet.
East Bay Mud, we've had something of a hitch in the get along with East Bay Mud, but would you like to explain where we stand on that, Brad?
Yeah. East Bay Mud, it's all about risk management, and that does make sense. They're reluctant that if somebody were to have access to the key, walk in, and then trip, fall, get hurt, they could sue East Bay Mud. Also, it's a sensitive, the reservoir is sensitive for a terrorist attack or someone messing with the water content. All of that makes sense. However, Lafayette PD has some critical assets and emergency equipment that is stored on East Bay Mud. And the only people that have access to it is the fire department and the police department. My chief of police and I have agreed that there is a camper which was originally designed for DUI checkpoints. That's a tremendous asset that the PD has, but we don't utilize that anymore. That's kind of, DUI checkpoints are kind of due to social media, they're dying off. And so we have a nice camper that's not being used. So the thought process was, if we stored and secured that at the top of the reservoir, we could conceivably have emergency medical supplies, obviously medical equipment, bullhorn, radio, bottles of water, blankets, burnover bag, whatever the board decides, we can secure that in a secure facility. The issue is if in case of an emergency, it's in advance, strategically located at the top of the hill, but that's going to require either a fire department or a PD personnel to hoof it 1 mile against traffic on foot and key their way in. And then once he keys himself in, will East Bay Mud let people run into there during a natural catastrophe? I'm having another follow-up meeting with their supervisors in 2 weeks in regards to that. So storing assets is fine, but getting access to that in case of an emergency is going to need somebody with a hitch that's already at the top of the hill and has not left to pull it out of their property. So we're trying to negotiate that. There is a hitch, but I want to have supplies in advance up at the top of the hill. If we need it, it's already there.
Yeah, we've got a lot more talking to do about this one.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay. Yeah. So those are, I don't know if I missed anything, but those are some of the things that we've been operating on up to this point.
Exactly.
In the remaining few minutes, if we can, I want to make sure that we had to interrupt our first item, and Lisa, you've done a lot of work on the chippers, for which many thanks. And just, I mean, I know we've read what you wrote, but bottom line, is this worth pursuing? Would it be, a thought occurred to me, would it be better if we tried to get, you know, one of those big green dumpsters in various neighborhoods and people could fill it with green waste only and, you know, for that are excessive? I don't know, what do you think, this is worthwhile pursuing or not?
Well, I think there might be different opinions by different members, and maybe we could save it for the next meeting to discuss more fully. I think, you know, Peter had some, you know, some thoughts, and then I had some experience, but I wanted to kind of update it. You know, I think bottom line is it's a significant program. I don't think anybody will deny that, you know, with cost and staff and hiring. And, you know, it's worth a discussion. I was kind of leaning after all this research to what you're sort of mentioning in terms of putting a dumpster, if a street, I mean, you're not going to haul that stuff very far, right? So it would have to be like a block where the neighbors came together, and it'd have to be big enough street for you to put a dumpster there in the first place, right? Because they're pretty big. I think that would be a good trial, personally. to do. I'm just not sure that the district has the bandwidth to get this program up, running, organized, managed. You know, we don't have our own forestry department to oversee this kind of work like Berkeley does. I think there's a lot to think about. And we have a pretty good, you know, just debris piece. I think Peter had a lot of concerns about just how do you organize the neighborhood to be aware of this. And I'll you know, defer to him. But I did want to say, I just was really curious about once we give people notices to clear through the fire department, through the inspection program. You know, I know on my block, there was a scurry 1 year of a lot of people doing a lot of clearing to meet the deadline of the notices that clearly they had gotten that summer. So I just don't know if, you know, what that program, how effective that is, and, you know, where we really want to go with this, if anywhere. So Peter, please.
Well, maybe you're suggesting we should table it for next time because we do want to hear from everybody on this, and we've got.
I know Peter has some very strong opinions on this as well, which are. Well,
you know, this is great. We ought to get them all up. Let's get the room to talk about it next time, if that's okay with people, because it's not. It can wait a bit. Yeah. Thank you. I have to ask Lorica, because public comment we would like to have on our agenda items. Is there anything that you'd like to say or ask as our lone attendee from the public today? I can unmute you if you would like to say anything.
Hi, I appreciate being able to participate in this. It was fascinating and interesting to hear, but no, I don't have any comments and nothing to contribute. So at this point.
Well, great. We're glad we have somebody at least visit. Now we don't feel so lonely.
Yeah. Thanks for joining.
I always feel like a watchdog in this position, but no, it's interesting. It's very interesting. So
thank you.
But I do have a question about the recording of this. Is it going to be available for the public to see on their own?
Yes. We upload them on our website. Mary will upload the recording as soon as she gets the opportunity. Perfect. And as soon as we adjourn, I'll stop the recording. For the next, would you, because we have so much to do, do you guys want to meet in 2 weeks or in 4 weeks? Larry says 4.
2.
Katie says 2. Lisa, what do you think?
Whatever works is whatever. I'm available. I'm here. I'm so here. I'm so darn here.
still here. Either way is fine with me, Kevin.
Okay, Peter, what do you think?
Yeah, likewise. I'm not going anywhere.
Okay. Paul,
I'm okay. I'm going places, but I should be here in 2 weeks. The fourth week might be a problem.
Okay, let's see if we, you know, what we have for. For items, if more things come up, yeah, okay, that's fine. Think about it. Let me know. Anything else before we adjourn?
I just want to mention that early on when we were talking about the cameras.
Oh yes, thank you.
David had a question, and so I put in the chat some clarifications, which hopefully answers his questions and maybe some other questions people may have.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Peter, I copied what you put in the chat verbatim, and it's in the minutes now.
Oh, thank you, Larry. That's great. Also, we have a question about whether Paul asked whether East Bay Mud's going to periodically cut the grass in the reservoir. That's a good question that maybe Officer Harms can direct to them, because if they don't cut it and it gets very high and dry, that's going to be a hazard.
I'll send him an email today.
Yeah, great, thanks. It just, I don't know how tall it gets. It's hard to tell from the road. Okay, well, okay. Thanks to everybody. We really appreciate the good work. We will keep you informed about things that come in as they come in. So this has been terrific. Thanks, and I guess we're adjourned.
Thank you.